This is a Power 98.7 podcast. Now we're talking. Subscribe to Power 98.7 podcasts in iTunes or wherever you get your podcasts. There's more on power987.co.za.
Africa is rich and not poor. As the great wealth that has been taken out of our continent over five centuries of despoliation and extortion, very well proves. Africa has immense actual and potential wealth: gold, diamond, copper, manganese, bauxite, iron ore, uranium, asbestos, chrome, cobalt, a host of other minerals. Our essential agricultural produce have all been drained away by colonialist imperialism. Africa is far from being poor. It is Africans who are poor, not Africa.
Just sharp words there from the first president of Ghana, Dr. Kwame Nkrumah, also one of the founding fathers of the Organization of African Unity, along with Abdel Nasser, Julius Nyerere, leaders who spoke unequivocally against colonization and didn't rest until those shackles, those political bonds were broken. But in that era as well, people like Amilcar Cabral, one of the greatest thought leaders of the pre-independence era, he's from Guinea-Bissau, he wrote and said many things, but one of those was not to confuse reality and your life with the ideas in your head, the things you imagine. So whatever you're experiencing doesn't have to manifest into what you hope. And he says the colonialists usually say that it was they who brought us into history. Today, what we're able to show is that this is not so. They made us leave history, our history, to follow them right back to follow the progress of their history. And with similar fervor and zeal, Ahmed Sekuture said, "We prefer poverty in liberty than riches in slavery," basically saying that he'd rather be poor and free than to pursue a destiny that brings wealth but be indebted to others. These are some of the thinkings that are foundational around a decolonization mindset at a political level. The conversation we're having is, what would a decolonization mindset entail at an academic and school curricular level? Because decolonizing the mind is really where the true battle of self-determination begins. So said Steve Biko, and so said Bob Marley as well. And it turns out, so says Professor Puleng Lengabula, who is the Vice Chancellor and the Principal of the University of South Africa, the largest institution of higher learning on the in South Africa, and indeed, I think, on the African continent. Good morning, Prof.
Good morning, Lerato, and good morning to your listeners. Yes, you're right. We are, and we are appreciative for being the inventor of distance education in the world.
We love what you do. So let's talk about what many principles of this era are seized with, which is this idea of changing curricula in such a way that it doesn't move away from the fundamentals of science, law, the humanities, but it starts to bring in indigenous knowledge systems. And I know UNISA's particularly focused on this.
Thank you very much. The University of South Africa is committed to ensuring that Africa's knowledge systems, its civilizations, technologies, philosophies, and languages are at the center of co-constructing knowledge, and knowledge that is transformative, knowledge that enhances and engenders the ideals of freedom, of self-determination, or at least the ability of people co-constructing the future that they would like to participate in. In this regard, education must not just be a resource that's utilized to create a marginalization or alienation, but it must be that resource that women and men, girls and boys, but also members of society harness to contributing to the economic system, structures, policies, and ideas or ideals that can shape how we live together, but as well the relationships that are humanizing, that take into cognizance the value of respecting or respectfully living with the ecology. In this instance, how we harness the philosophy of Ubuntu in political systems, why in a moment such as this, when we should be celebrating the successes of democratic dispensation, we are maimed by gender injustices, rape culture. So these are the aspects around a decolonial or decolonizing academic system. It has to be attentive to the social, economic, ecological exigencies or environments that we are creating such knowledge.
So what I understand from what you're saying, it needs to be holistic, it needs to be inclusive, and it needs to be respectful. So it needs to sort of say, yes, there's an established theoretical body of work in various disciplines, but you've not considered these other processes as well, and we want to bring them into the system.
Yes, it's that idea that you have already alluded to, Lerato, that all communities, no matter the geographic location, have knowledge systems. They have embodied knowledge systems. But how do you validate the knowledge systems, systematize them, ensure that they are at the center of changing knowledge? So the theories that majority of us would have been exposed to in universities, but also even in basic and secondary education, would have been around Western civilization, would have been around Western philosophies, sciences, and ideas, and would have negated the validity of knowledge systems from Africa. When we think about medical sciences, for instance.
Yeah, I want to bring that in.
Yes, we don't even acknowledge that the first heart surgery, for instance, was done in South Africa.
Yeah.
Or when we think around archaeology, we don't think around Mapungubwe or even the pyramids. We think about the pyramids in Egypt, but not the pyramids in Sudan. Mm. Yet the majority of the pyramids and the scientific aspects, whether trigonometry or associated mathematical concepts around architectures of Africa, those are often not taught formally in universities.
I love what you're saying. And when you said medical science, it triggered me because we have just recently the example of what it is to look at the world from a Western gaze. So the whole world has been ravaged and inconvenienced by the COVID-19 pandemic. We've seen it. And South African researchers have been busy at work studying the characteristics of this virus as it manifests in South Africa. And they came across Omicron, the Omicron variant. And they first notified the World Health Organization and the world that, oh, we've detected another variant and we think it has mild effects. But despite the South African scientists saying that, the whole world put South Africa on a red list, shut down their borders and started making a lot of noise about Omicron. Only 5 days later, everybody had to recalibrate their position, retract what they were saying, and go back to the advice of the South African scientists. But because that advice had come from South Africa, because Omicron was discovered by scientists in South Africa, and I have to say, black and white scientists, the mere fact that they were scientists in Africa meant that scientists in the rest of the world didn't believe them at first, but believed them 5 days later to be completely, completely valid and accurate. And that is what the decolonization mindset entails. It's not even about black or white. It's about anything that comes from Africa is deemed wrong and everything that comes from the West is deemed right. And you want to break that down.
Yes, we want to break that barrier. And I like the example that you're giving, Lerato, because it speaks true to the idea of the hierarchies that have been created around knowledge creation, construction, or research, or innovation. The Omicron example is very important. Oftentimes, when I share with people that UNISA invented distance education, people do not clap. But if we were to say some Ivy League university had done it, they would appreciate it. It's because we have also, as Africans, internalized that our knowledge systems are not resourceful. yet they are and they're globally impactful. So it's very important for us as universities to start institutionalizing them, ensuring that they become the resources, working with scholars such as Teresa. There's a scholar, Teresa Moyo, who reminds us, she's an economist, who reminds us that we cannot think about economic systems that are successful if we do not also create heterodox systems which are akin to how we have always lived as Africans in terms of economic systems. And these issues are not just philosophical or ideological ideas. They are really around how we can use collectivist systems to transforming societies. How do we ensure that as Africans, we also do not belittle ourselves in terms of the knowledge production, but see our resources and invention as equally important. So are our languages.
I love what you're saying, and I usually like to use simple examples, and I usually use the example of fashion. When I say,
yes,
you'll look at a designer in Africa who's probably even manufacturing and weaving their own fabric, but because the dress is made in Africa, you think it's inferior. But the minute a designer in Europe steals that intellectual property, uses the same technique to weave a fabric, you're willing to pay 10,000 rands for the dress because it was made in Italy. And yet they've used exactly a technique, a knowledge system from Africa, but we belittle it because it comes from Africa. And at UNISA, in your various disciplines, you're trying to really debunk those myths. So let's talk about how you do it day to day, because some people would say in the maths and sciences, for instance, that's non-political. Maths and science is neutral. It's agnostic. It's either the formula is right or the formula is wrong. So how are you decolonizing the mind there?
That's not true, Lerato. Mathematics and science, whether physics, are also political. And if I were to give you an example, we earlier spoke about the pyramids, and I told you that if you look at the pyramids and their scientific implications in terms of the trigonometry or in terms of a particular component of mathematics, oftentimes we don't look at that as a mathematical articulation. Let's take, for instance, our famous artist, the Ndebele artist, Mema Hlangu. She uses mathematical articulation through art form. And I want to use her as an example because it's Women's Day. At no point have we created a methodology that attempts to understand the mathematical computational issues. It had to be BMW and New York that celebrated her artistic and mathematical projection, because we as Africans had not understood that through her expression of art and painting, there were mathematical symbolism, but also mathematical communication. So maths is located, maths is political, and mathematics is very important, including the architecture of the pyramids, or even the architecture of the homes that we live in, are aligned in terms of energy, in terms of warmth and heat, to the topography of our location. Yes. We use, when we use a thatched roof, a lot of people undermine it. But in the context of energy crisis in the global arena, only now people are realizing that the thatched roof, the circular structure, are actually in concert with the topography, but also with energy systems that are life-affirming instead of those that we've been used to in the past, which have actually created some of the challenges that we are having around load shedding.
So simple things as how did people used to do it? And you might have a solution to your problem today, and don't nullify it because it's from Africa. Okay, so you've corrected us on the fact that science and maths are not neutral, and that the geometric patterns that Gogo Esther Mahlangu uses are actually mathematical, and it took BMW to compute them because we didn't do that ourselves. What about humanity, law and politics? Because I would say here you're going to see many social and cultural references, and here you're going to have to unlearn many, many teachings.
Yes, you're right. We have depended. Let me also give an example of law. A lot of laws, mores, ethics are often based on Western notion of personhood. And of personhood, when we talk about human beings, thinking about them in the liberal sense of an individual. Yet in our philosophical and understandings, the collectivist approach where the individual is a component of the whole and therefore vacillates between their autonomy and interdependence. But in our legal system, we think of an individual as an autonomous, separate person who's not interlinked, because we've borrowed the liberal notion, which is a Western notion of an individual. And oftentimes we refer to Kant or to René Descartes, the French philosopher who was defining what it means to being human by using the philosophy that I am because I think. Mm-hmm. And yet our own philosophical understanding is that I am because I think, I feel, I'm inextricably bound to yourself, but also to ecology, and therefore I should always be caring at all times. So we talk, when we in law, we talk about persons with disabilities, creating that notion of an autonomous individual and not wanting to look at the people living with disabilities as communities, as systems and structures that require systems and structures to changing and transforming their marginalization. So even law is not innocent. It is very important, therefore, for us as African universities to look at how legal construction or interpretation takes into cognizance some of these things that are often taken for granted.
As we wind down the conversation because of time, tell us specifically what UNISA is doing in reworking your curriculum or building partnerships across the African continent in pursuance of this ideal of a more inclusive, co-constructed education system, which fundamentally should start to decolonize our minds.
Thank you very much, Lerato. We are doing our best to ensure that we use African languages and translanguaging in order that they become holistic, institutionalized modalities and languages of teaching, research, and innovation. We're also ensuring that inclusive languages or inclusive philosophies that understand the varied notions of being, ontology, of ecology and relationality in terms of the socioeconomic system are entailed. We also ensure that when we prescribe readings or materials for our students, that they are also materials from the continent by authors in the continent and who are committed to the emancipatory agenda of the continent. And finally, we ensure that our students are also exposed to multidisciplinary approaches, which do not atomize knowledge, but which expose them to the global systems, knowledge systems, including Africa's knowledge systems. This is quite important because even in the global north, the knowledges of Africa have actually contributed to the building infrastructures, but also the economies of the global north. So we cannot be indifferent to the global north because after all, it has benefited a lot from our people who were forcefully taken into the through the transatlantic slavery to North America, for example. or through the biotic and mineral resources of the continent, which are globalized, whether chocolate made from cocoa from Cameroon and Ivory Coast, or whether the geometric patterns that we're talking about, including fashion ideas that you and me and others would be taking into. So it's very important that universities in Africa take seriously the technologies, the philosophies, scientific ideas, as well as African authors or African scientists and their inventions.
So, I mean, if I was to paraphrase everything you've just said, it's first and foremost, it's important to read and study things in your local indigenous languages so that it translates better and you can see the poeticism, the beauty in it all, the historicity in it all. It's also about reading the literature of African authors, whatever the era, so that you get a picture of the world you're living in. It's learning about the civilizations historically so that you really know what is the contribution of Africa to Western science, medicine, and law. And simply put, it's eating a chocolate knowing that the cocoa is from Africa. Only the milk and sugar is Swiss, even if that's so. Thank you, Professor Puleng Lenkabula. It's always wonderful to learn from you, to speak to you. She's the principal and the vice chancellor of the University of South Africa, the largest distance learning institution on the African continent, and one under her leadership that is committed to reshaping the curriculum in such a way that they co-construct and they make sure there's a lot more Pan-African content so that we decolonize our minds. Matters. Know your history, know your mind.
You've been listening to a Power 98.7 podcast. For more podcasts, visit power987.co.za or subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.